All of the views and opinions expressed here are those of the individual speaking and may not be representative of Coding American. At times, language may be considered vulgar. Listener discretion is suggested.
Hey, what's going on? Round two. If you had just watched our little test run, we're back.
Take two. It takes two, like the movie.
No, take two. Anyhow, what's going on? I'm Scott from Koenig. Haven't been here in a while. This is Luis. He's still from Koenig.
Yep. I'm Luis from Koenig.
And hey, how are you? It's nice to see you. I feel nice being back. It feels good. Feels warm.
It's nice to have you back.
Yeah,
you
know? Feels good, right?
It's nice to have you back on your day off, buddy.
I came in just for this. I want you guys to understand my dedication to this podcast.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, listen, before we get into a few things, let's talk about some of the things we got going on. This Friday, we have a Hype is Right dropping. Make sure you check that out. Super important because we haven't done one in a little bit, but it's going to be good. We also just got through with last Friday.
Sure,
was...
we did a Carnatomy, which is our version of a car walk around. That's what we call it. We're Sherwin Paquette. He actually has a hill climb, Evo X. If you don't know what hill climb is, go check out SCCA.
And I bet you our next guest probably even knows who this man is.
That's pretty
possible.
Cool. Yeah, definitely.
You know.
And next podcast, Scott is going to be here as well. We're going to have Brian Gillespie from Hasport, VTech Academy.
Yeah, so if you've been around the game for a while, you know Brian. I've known Brian for, it's got to be almost 15 years already. Really one of the OGs that doesn't get a lot of credit for being an OG, but he certainly is. And if you have followed him at all, you'll know that he had a pretty nasty crash just a few years back. It was on like Today's Show, CNN, you know. That kind of thing. So, but you know, listen, I want to get what do you want to
and
talk
here's
about?
Another fun fact actually fun fact. That I kind of want to
He's
talk about our guest that we have today has a video on VTech Academy where they review his car at SEMA.
All right,
just want to throw that,
that
out there.
A great tidbit.
Go check it out.
Listen, let's not delay this out anymore. With us today is somebody that's really put so much of his time and effort into road racing. Had a really good season this year until
2020 champ.
Until it's a slight mishap just at the end.
Oh, this season.
But, you know, for all those people that know about building cars and doing the work yourself, and this person is the definition of a true enthusiast.
Oh, yeah.
Let's get him in here. Eric Coutel. Eric, did I butcher your last name?
No, you got it pretty close. Eric Coutel.
Tell.
You know what's funny? Because I know you know him because
Aki.
Yeah, they have conversations. Yeah, he's actually helping Aki
with the build
and giving him some advice and stuff like that. But he wasn't too sure how to say his name, so he
said you
Cuddle.
Yeah, I get it quite often.
Yeah. So listen, thanks for coming to do this. I know we've been trying to link up with this for a minute, right?
Yeah, for sure.
But and I know your work schedule is a little wild, so I appreciate you taking the time to do our humble little podcast here, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Glad to be here. Really appreciate you guys hosting this. This is awesome.
No, listen, we love to have these conversations because that's all these are. They're just car conversations, and it's cool to do it with real car people. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's dive right into it. Why did you crash your car? What was your motivation behind that?
Well, I mean, the motivation was, to be honest, I was trying to win a championship.
I understand.
We had a killer 2021 season, and the championship, it literally went down to the final race of the year at Road America, which is notoriously, you know, treacherous, especially in the kink. And it was the fourth race of the weekend, and I had to finish ahead of my competitor to win the championship. And in Grid Life GLTC, which is what we race in, we do like these random inverts for the final race of the weekend to kind of spice things up.
Yep.
And we kind of got screwed. So I kind of started a little bit further back, and it also started to rain a little bit. So there was a lot of factors that kind of played into it. And we went into the kink the first lap, and there was a potential stack up happening in front of me where one car was trying to make a move. They touched, they almost spun out right after the kink. And then I was coming through and kind of just wasn't really paying attention and tried to make a move to shoot for a gap. And ended up spinning myself out and crashed into a concrete wall going about like 110 miles per hour. So not only did I ruin the car, I ruined the championship. And yeah, the car's right here next to me. Whole front end is completely destroyed. So I would say there was not really a good motivation to wreck the car. And it's definitely a lesson learned.
So now I will say one thing, because I think it's something, you know, that you know, and I'm sure you've been told countless times by every single person that has probably come up to you that knows you, is that that is, I mean, you know this, that is racing, right? Like you, like you can't, like, I look at something like that. And I think at first thing is first is that if you were watching the live stream or you were, or paying attention to some of this stuff, I think the first thing for anybody that knows you is, oh my God, I hope he's okay. Right.
Yeah, I was fine.
Which was fantastic. But you know, look, the next thing is that guys like you that put it all out there, that push it hard, you can't, you can't hold yourself up to a thing like you lost. Like going into a season, you still finished second basically without finishing an event. And on top of that, you know, those are the moves that, like, you look at it one way, all right, you just, it just missed. But it goes the other way and you're a superhero and you win the championship. Like, you got to be in that position to have a chance. You know what I mean? So, like, you have to put yourself in that spot every time. Have to.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there was definitely a lot of situations, especially this season, where I got lucky myself and I made some of those moves happen. Or, you know, there was an event right before where I actually lost brakes completely going about 115 at Gingerman into the last corner and put the car into the spin, and I managed to save the car. And you just, you know, that's racing. Is it's not a matter of if you're going to wreck the car. It's usually when, and it happens to basically everybody. And I've been racing wheel to wheel for 5-6 years now, and I've been pretty lucky to not be involved in a major wreck like that. And it finally happens to me, and you get to a point where you kind of think you're invincible, you think you can make those moves stick, and it's just one little millimeter mistake, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, you spin yourself out and you crash the car. And you know, I could care less about the championship. I mean, the worst part about it was that it kind of left a sour taste in who ended up winning the championship was a Jeremy Swenson. He was totally bummed because I wrecked my car. And I mean, for those who know me, like, that car is my passion. Like, I spent countless hours on it, and I hated to see everyone kind of end the weekend on a low note because of a mistake that I made. And I feel like I kind of stole his glory a little bit, which was the most painful thing about it. And you know, I could care less about winning the championship, but what kind of hurt me as well was, you know, wrecking my pride and joy. That was also hurt quite a bit. But you know, new opportunities come up, and that's kind of, I guess, what I'm here to talk about is the new build. So opportunities come up with, you know, mistakes like that. So,
which that's actually what I wanted to kind of get to, because you know, and I do want to get back to the EG hatch eventually, but
yeah.
One of the things that this situation kind of created was a new avenue, right? And obviously, it's this new build. Can you tell us a little bit about what's going on? What's the plans? I mean, I'm excited for it. I know a little bit about it, but yeah.
Yeah. So it's, you know, I was actually, it's kind of funny because midway through last season, you know, I've always had this dream build in my head that I wanted to basically build, not really a replica, but something that closely resembles, you know, the 90s touring cars, the JTCC Civic sedan specifically. Always wanted to build one. It's kind of my dream build. And like last year, I was kind of thinking, you know, maybe, you know, if I do well with the hatch, I can sell the hatch and kind of fund this new build and, you know, kind of build my dream car. And unfortunately, it didn't really happen that way. A different situation occurred where now the hatch is kind of worthless. But yeah, so that's basically what I have to the left of me is ended up getting an EG sedan, and that's going to be the plan, is to build it towards Grid Life Touring Cup, but also have it be heavily inspired by those 90s touring cars. So, you know, think BTCC, JTCC, you know, all those cars, you know, big tall wheels slammed to the absolute ground. You know, I hope it's going to work, but I think it's going to look awesome. And it's going to be a lot of work to make the car actually function properly, because I can't go as custom as those cars did, but it's going to be a fun challenge.
It's crazy because like for me, the reason it resonates, I think, so well is because that's like my time period of when I felt like I was watching a lot of those cars. And for those that, like, I'm just going to take some of the people that maybe are a little bit younger than me back a little bit. So I don't want to get into the old man syndrome, but here's what I'm going to bring to you. Like, These were the cars that you were watching on TV, on Speed TV, if you can remember that far back.
Yes, back in the, you know, right.
Back in the day. And for people like us that maybe had cars in the infancy of that sport tuning compact era where it was just starting to get big, to be able to watch these cars, you were watching them twofold. You were watching them, one, because you were definitely going to try to steal some of the things that you saw on those cars for your own personal cars. Like, that is the whole reason that there was only one windshield wiper on everybody's car back in the day, right? And the other part of it is, too, is that was your first time when you really saw these cars get competitive in another form of racing aside from drag racing. So it was another way of really seeing our cars in a very competitive nature. So I'm like thrilled that that's the style you're going for, because I think it's just, it's so, it's retro to us, not retro to like retro. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's just something about 90s race cars. They just have a certain vibe to them that I don't think anything these days kind of even comes close to. It's just, I think it's the way that the cars kind of had a mostly stock body style. They were very relevant, but like they just were completely extreme and custom underneath, where it seems like everything nowadays is just kind of homologated to a certain standard and, you know, big fiberglass body kits, and it kind of loses what the car was meant to be. But yeah, just 90s touring cars, man. I think that's where it's at. And I'm so stoked to finally build the sedan of my dreams. And that's basically what I'm going to be doing for the next few months. Countless hours in the garage, building it up from complete scratch.
Sounds great.
Well, and this is one of the cool things that you didn't get to do with the hatch, is you're actually going to be doing the whole build on YouTube, right? Like, we're going to be able to kind of see it with
I'm trying.
No, man, you're doing a good job. I've been watching, man, and you're doing a great job. And I know what's going on, and it's kind of cool, for sure.
I got a few episodes out, but it's a lot of time to record. But then the amount of time that it takes to edit, it's just it's kind of like bogging things down. It's slowing me down a little bit. So I've had a week off here that I've been kind of doing a lot of stuff without recording, just trying to pump these small little projects out quickly. And hopefully once I kind of get settled down and have decent progress, I can kind of focus more on the YouTube side of it a little bit. But yeah, that's one thing I really wanted to do. I didn't have a chance to do it with the hatch, but I really wanted to kind of get some videos out on YouTube with like how to's. And it's one of the things I kind of pride myself on my Instagram, is I try to show everyone, you know, how to do the things that I do. And I share every detail, all the build secrets. You know, I'm showing people on the Instagram, you know, how I do the stuff I do. And with like forums, you know, kind of being a thing of the past, there's no real way to share that information efficiently. So YouTube, I think, is the next best step. So that's kind of what I want to do with the sedan, is get more YouTube videos out there. So hopefully I can kind of catch back up and start pumping those out a little bit more quickly.
Yo, your Instagram is great. For those that don't follow Eric on Instagram, we'll make sure that his information ends up in the description. But listen, I think what's interesting for me, and I say this coming from a place of somebody that's built a lot of cars and done a lot of different things, I've never been a road racer, right? Like, I've never done the time attacks. I've never done the wheel to wheels. You know, my background came in drag racing, and then like I've done some autocrossing, but like not good. So watching your channel, I think there's a lot of things you do, and I'm like, I know that. But then there's so much that you do, and I have never seen any of it, like aero. Like, I've watched you give really good information on how you were building aero, for especially for the hatch, and you would show how you do it in your own garage and different things like that. And that, to me, is like something that I really you can appreciate. So if you're a car guy, following Eric, especially his stories, I think is a really big piece to learning. And that's what you have to take from other car people when they're putting information out. You got to grab that. That's what makes some of these racers advance, is the fact that they're around other racers. They pick up other things.
Yeah. You're constantly learning new things, especially in the motorsports community. Like, I've been involved on some pro teams as well. And, you know, just looking at these pro built cars, you learn a ton of things about it. And I kind of take those lessons learned and kind of apply it to my club racing cars, and even from other people, you know, other people in the sport. It's just, there's so much knowledge to be gained. You just got to soak it all up. And Instagram's kind of tough though, because, you know, I'll post something and it kind of gets lost quickly. You know, Instagram, it's just like only your most recent posts get really noticed. So that's why I try to say some of it in the stories, and you know, when people ask me questions, I always try to answer them or like kind of send them the post that I did on a specific part. But hopefully the YouTube, it's kind of easier to track it. But you know, yeah, just try to share everything with the stories. And you know, I love sharing it and get a ton of questions. And you know, like what you guys mentioned with Aki, you know, I've been kind of helping him out a little bit on his, you know, track car build, and that's kind of his first build in that kind of realm. And kind of just sharing, you know, that knowledge that I've gained and kind of pointing him in the right direction. And I'm sure he's going to learn a ton of stuff himself, you know, once he gets out there. So, you know, that's kind of, I've had a ton of people help me too. So I always try to like repay it back to the community.
Yeah, it's super important. Before we forget, because this is for me, I'm going to selfishly take a side note here, right? So Eric, I've seen the pictures on Instagram. I've seen the pictures you've posted of the damage to the hatch.
Yeah.
I look at those photos and I struggle to, like, I don't see where it's a lost cause. How much damage went forward that I'm missing? Like,
so it's kind of funny because the first picture I posted it from like a 3/4 angle of like where the crash happened. And it was kind of an optical illusion because the car looked completely fine. Like, you know, just like a maybe bent cross member, but I can show you guys with the camera here, but the whole front of the car basically twisted like that. And it pushed the firewall back significantly. So the right front corner of the car dug into the wall and it pushed the frame rail basically back into the firewall. And it's probably fixable. And I'm getting to a point where I think I am actually going to fix it. It's kind of a funny story because I had two options. Either I was going to, you know, try to reclip the front end, or I was going to get a sedan and start from scratch. And that's kind of what I ended up doing just because of selfish reasons of me actually wanting to build that. But I do want to eventually fix the hatch. And the funny story was there was a Houtsike Hero challenge of 2021 and my car was in the competition. And I kept asking my followers, hey, you know, vote for my car. Let's get it to the victory. And if the car wins, I'll fix it. And so the car ended up winning, which was kind of awesome. It was beating out like 1200 horsepower drag cars. And I have 180 horsepower K20, K24, but yeah, so I think I am going to fix the hatch, and I got a friend here locally who's got a whole front clip, and I think we're going to try to get it to one of his friend's shops, and we're going to do a whole new front clip on the EG hatch and hopefully try to fix it and get it back out there because, I mean, like I said, the car means so much to me, and I do think it's fixable, and hopefully the work that's going to be done on it can make it work as it did before, and if it does, then I'll have two race cars that I don't know which one to race on any given weekend. But if the plan works out and I could get the car fixed before the season starts, I might actually compete in the hatch for a few events while I build the sedan. So like I said, I don't really know what's going to happen yet, but that's the plan.
So I guess the magic moment will really be when you get it on a frame machine and you get a pull going and you can see if you can get that, at least the strut tower back to where it needs to be able to lop off everything and reclip it, right?
Yeah. So I think the goal would be to pull the right front out and try to get the firewall to basically end up where it should be. And then you can kind of cut the front frame rails off and then put the new horns on. And hopefully the firewall gives you a good base to weld new front end to it. But I'm not the expert. That's why it's going to go to a frame guy. And if he's confident he can fix it, then we're going to fix it. And I'm going to be pumped to get the car back out there. So I don't want to give on it just yet because it's got a lot of history and I don't want it to die.
Yeah, listen, I don't think you should because I really, like, you know, I've seen so many cars that, you know, and I've had experience with some of these cars where it were pretty good hits. And it's so interesting and it's always amazed me. It's like watching black magic when cars get onto a frame machine because you say you're like, oh, that's there's no way, and then all of a sudden they start to pull and pull and pull and they set up and they measure and they do that, they pull and pull and pull, next thing you know you're like, oh my god, like you're within millimeters of where the structural needs to be. And then you just look at all the stuff that's bent and crumped and you just literally lop it off and get the new stuff on. So, I mean, I'm oversimplifying it, but it's incredible how fast sometimes, you know, you could be on a frame machine for two and a half hours and you, like all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, it doesn't even look that bad.
No,
it's crazy. I hope I hope that works out.
I hope so too, because at the moment, progress for the sedan, you know, it's basically just me building the car right now. And I do have a lot of support and sponsors, but you know, it's the time and the man hours. So I don't think I can get the car done in time to compete, at least in the first half of the next season. So if this car just gets a new front end, then I can just slap all the parts back on it and run it. I think that's going to be the way to go for the first few events. And like I said, I just got to see what the results are and how long it's going to take to get that fixed, and if it's even possible to fix it. But fingers crossed, because I do want to still race that car.
Yeah, it is crazy, though, because
how badass would it be to have two?
Oh, 1,000%. And the best part about it is that here's the thing. You may be building another Civic, but no matter how you duplicate a build, no matter how much you take the knowledge you had from one car and put it into the other car, you still are going to have a bunch of events where you're going to be fine-tuning. And
yeah,
you know, like to be able to have the hatch to at least get yourself back to kind of where you know you need to be to get a baseline. I don't know. It would just be, and it'd be cool to be able to save your history. I think that's the biggest part.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the two builds, like, they're going to be completely different. Just like the theories that I'm applying to these cars, like the sedan, it's going to be a whole new challenge. Even though it's mostly similar, like the chassis is pretty much identical, but it's got a 2-inch longer wheelbase, which it won't really change much. You can kind of set the car up to account for that, but just the way the car is going to be much lower. I'll probably get more detail on it, but just everything on this car is going to be just a little bit different, to where I can't really apply the same kind of setups that I used to have on the hatch. So it is going to be kind of tricky to get this car done and then try to go compete in it and also figure everything out. So I definitely need to have like a few test events with this car just to kind of get it dialed in, which would be perfect to have the hatch, because then I can just race the hatch as is and, you know, kind of start off where I left it and then kind of figure the sedan out and take my time and do it right.
Where's the next step that you need to move on? Like where are you at right now with the new build?
So I don't know if you guys can see it, but it's right here to my left. I am just doing a lot of fab work on it right now. So basically the biggest ideal, or the what I'm trying to achieve with the car, is I'm trying to run taller wheel and tires. So on the hatch, I used to run 15x9 countergrams and decagrams with a 225 Hoosier, and I actually ran the hatch pretty low, but even with that smaller OD tire, it was like a 23-inch tire. The tire would still bottom out in the fender wells if you hit a big bump. Or so I wanted to run bigger wheel and tires on the sedan, once again, to kind of replicate the touring car look, but also to have a bigger rolling radius, which kind of helps you with acceleration and braking grip. And in order to do that, you have to kind of cut the chassis up significantly. So I'm doing tubs in the front and tubs in the back, kind of what you see with like drifters, just to kind of give you way more room in the wheel wells. So I'll have like about 4 more inches of space in the tubs, in the wheel wells, for the tire to go up, which will allow me to lower the car even more than I did with the hatch. So what I'm doing right now is I'm basically just doing a ton of grinding, a ton of sanding, a lot of cutting, welding. I got pretty much the whole front end tub work pretty much complete, and I'm kind of working my way back through the chassis. And then eventually I'll be starting on the rear tubs. And it's kind of funny, I actually end up buying trailer fenders from Tractor Supply, and that's what I use to basically weld in to make those tubs. So it's a kind of a trick that the drifters use. But doing a lot of stitch welding on every major critical frame component. One thing I learned with the hatch is these 90 Hondas, like, they're pretty weak. They're super flimsy. They have a lot of twist. And over the years of racing that car, like, you start to see tears in a lot of components. So we're going to do all stitch welding throughout the entire car. And yeah, just a lot of fab work.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like, I don't think people really understand, like, they see these drift cars, and I think that there's a misconception that these cars are just bolted on. And yes, they know there's fab work, cages and stuff, but when you go back to the early 90s, these cars were not really known for their heavy sheet metal. You know what I mean? Like, they were fuel efficient monsters that were supposed to just be the everyday commuter cars. And so we've transformed them into these, you know, high power, you know, G for G facing machines here. And, you know, and so you got to account for that some way, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Especially, so we used to run on Hoosiers, which like a Hoosier is a 40 treadwear racing tire. And the amount of grip those tires produce, it's just so high for these old chassis. So I would just, I would go through suspension components and I would reinforce them, and you would see another part start to tear, and then you'd have to reinforce that. And like the failure always kind of propagates to a new point. However, the Grid Life Touring Cup rules, we are changed. They have changed for the next season, which we're now strictly a street tire class. So we can only run 200 treadwear tires, which will kind of help alleviate some of the high stressors. But that's another reason why I wanted to go with the 17s, because you get a lot more variety in tire of it, like tire width and sizes. So I ended up partnering with Falcon. So we'll be running the Falcon RT 660.
Good tire.
And I'll have a really good tire. My good friend David from Hybrid Racing, he kind of linked us up and he's been using those tires. So they're also, Falcon has been involved with Grid Life for a long time. So I knew that's the tire I wanted to run. And I'll be running a 235, I think 40, 17 up front, which is really wide on a 17x9 hexaform, which I'm super pumped to be running.
Hey.
And the tricky part is, since the car's gonna be so low, I'm gonna have to tuck that 235 up into the fenders, which is, I don't even know how I'm gonna accomplish that yet, but that's gonna be a problem in the near future. But turning radius is gonna be completely non-existent. But that's what these cars had to deal with in the 90s. You know, they were so low that they had minimal turning radius. So like, if you go into a slide with these cars, like, you're not gonna catch it. So yeah, it's just gonna be little gremlins here and there that I gotta figure out with this chassis, but it's gonna be awesome, I think.
So now, what do you do with the external? I know Luis got a couple comments and stuff that I want to get to, but so what do you do with, like, so are you running stock sheet metal in the front, like fenders and stuff like that, or do you plan to go like over fenders to try to accommodate a little bit more scrub radius and stuff?
Yeah, so I want to try to replicate as close to what the Civics used to look like. So I do want to try to run stock fenders, but I'm slowly realizing that the 235 is a lot wider than what they ran back in the day.
Yeah.
So yeah, what they used to run in the 90s, they used to run, I think, like 215s, and they were like 18 inches, actually, their wheels, which is kind of crazy. And their overall diameters, I think, were like 25 inches. My setup will be like 24.4, but it's going to be a lot wider. So I don't think a stock fender is going to work. I'm going to try to pull it like crazy and roll it and see if I can make room. But what I might end up doing, I might try to make the fenders a little bit wider while trying to maintain the OEM look, or I might radius the fender up. So if you are aware with the Accords used to run like a taller arch to allow the tire to kind of turn. So I got a few backup plans if things kind of don't work out, but I'm going to try my best to run a stock fender.
Will you promise to at least record in good detail that oh shit moment when you realize exactly what you're going to have to do? Because I'm, as a wheel and tire guy, I would like to watch you, somebody physically go through that process of, all right, how's here? I'm checking. All right, I'm screwed. This is what I got to do.
Yeah, I am definitely going to be screwed, but I'm trying to, once I get the Koenigs in, once they ship, I'll be able to mount the tire and then really see what I'm working with. And I don't want to notch the frame to kind of allow for a greater turning radius, because that's just going to weaken it. But like I said, I got a few options, but I'm going to be worried if I'm going to be on track and not have enough steering angle to correct the slide. that's going to be a problem. So definitely have to make sure the car functions primarily over looking cool. But to me, they're usually pretty close.
Yeah. And so, wheel and tire thing you said about running 17.9s front, what's going to be the rear size?
So the rear, I'm going to do a 17x8 with the 215. Right. So that should fit a lot easier in the back. I wouldn't really be concerned with that. Mm-hmm. And the Grid Life, they kind of introduced a new tire stagger rule that you can kind of go up or down to average out to what the tire size you have to run. So normally I would run a 225 all around, but now you can run like a 235 up front and a 215 in the back, which is going to help tremendously with front wheel drive cars.
Yeah.
So yeah, I got to really try my best to make that 235 work up front, because I kind of have to rely on it with the front wheel drive car, just because, you know, you're doing all your on the front. That's really going to help performance. So going to try my best to make that work.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. We've seen, obviously, there's been a lot of movement in that direction of the reverse stagger for front wheel drive race cars. Yeah. So that makes a lot of sense. You want to question some stuff up?
Well, yeah, no. Our friend here, Angel, has a question for you, Eric. He said, will the longer wheelbase hurt performance due to the flex in the chassis, or is it irrelevant?
So the longer, that's kind of irrelevant, because one of the things with this car is it's going to be, I'm going to put a crazy cage into it. So I got a cage planned in March, and the cage is going to tie into basically all of the shock towers. It's going to be like an FIA rally style cage. So the cage itself is going to provide a ton of rigidity into the entire chassis. So longer wheelbase wise, it won't be an issue with rigidity, but what the longer wheelbase will do, it's going to affect kind of how the car handles. 103, it's 103 inches for the sedan and 101 for the hatch. So the longer wheelbase will kind of make it a little bit sluggish in transitions. But the good thing about the longer wheelbase is I do plan on running no aero with this car. So, like, once again, this is a grid life rule kind of thing where you can run a high downforce aero kit and take extra weight, or you can run no aero and lose some weight. So that's going to be the plan with this car, is to run no aero. So that longer wheelbase will help a lot in stability on those high speed corners where you can't rely on the rear wing. So there's benefits and negatives to longer wheelbase. I'd say the negatives is like slow speed corners and, you know, transitions. It's going to be a little bit pushy. Whereas in the high speed stuff, that longer wheelbase will kind of help you with stability. So,
You got anything else, or
for now? No, because he answered a lot of it. That's why.
So. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So I think it's awesome. It's like, it, you know, for me, I've always been, I think, I'm pretty confident with this. Like, I think that at this stage of my life, I'm more excited about building cars than I am even about, like, driving them, you know. I mean, that's probably proof from what I own, but what I'm saying is, like, I just, there's a lot to me in the time and the thinking and the fabricating and the making and the, you know, and then watching my thoughts go from here to like the car, you know.
So Eric, he's saying, in the fact that he has a I was gonna say G35, a 350Z that he works on profusely but never drives it anywhere, so it just sits there. But yeah, I mean,
I'm right there with you. I love working on the cars. Like, that was one of the things with the hatch, is I spent so many hours just constantly improving things, and I have a problem where, like, I'll do something and it'll never be to my complete satisfaction. I'll have to always redo it eventually. So just constantly tinkering with something and making it better, and, you know, creating your vision, I really enjoy it, which is why I'm super excited to build a sedan, to, like, build it completely from scratch, from the bottom up, and kind of use all the lessons that I learned to kind of create my ideal race car. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of things on the car that I'm not going to be happy with, that I'm going to want to redo eventually, but it's going to be a fun project. And I love building the cars. And then it's even better to race a car that you built on track and have it do well and win races.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, so what was your progression? Like, how did you go from, where was your start in motorsport?
So I grew up in New York City in Queens. I was chatting with you guys earlier. You guys from Long Island.
Yeah.
Yep. Pretty cool. But I didn't really have access to cars in the city, and I was kind of always a car guy, and I've had family friends that actually used to race in Speed Vision. Kind of funny you mentioned that. And I was kind of always drawn to the Hondas because that's what they used to race. And he had like a Prelude and Integra, and it was really cool, and I was always into the Hondas from a kid. And then in college, I got my first car, which was an Integra GSR, and kind of started autocrossing that kind of at an entry level. And then slowly got more serious into it. And then I ended up eventually picking up Integra Type R, which I have under the cover there. And that car was my baby for a few years. And I autocrossed that competitively. And I kind of did the, you know, the national championships and the super tours and all that stuff. The pro solos, I mean. And once I graduated college, I got a job at Honda in Ohio. So I finally had a little bit more income. And that's when I started going into the track days and did a few track days in the Type R. And I knew, like, at that second, like, I was hooked. Like, this is what I wanted to do. And I wanted to do the club racing, you know, wheel to wheel. And I found the hatch for sale for a killer deal. I already had a roll cage in it. It was basically a race car, but kind of an entry, like, it had the D series in it. And basically started with that car, got my novice license through SCCA, and raced that car for, I think, like 3 years in the SCCA, and slowly improved it. And then, yeah, just kind of went from there, just constantly continued racing, and then just wrenching. Like, throughout college, I learned a lot of my wrenching through friends, and then coming out of college, you know, working at Honda, learned stuff from there. And yeah, just tackling anything and everything with my own hands. And then if I don't know how to do it, you know, you just kind of figure it out. So I'd say over the past 10 years is just me slowly learning and kind of leveling up my abilities, and now here I am today. So
yeah, it's funny. Still, it's learning. Like, oh yeah, like all the time. I just think it's so, people don't understand what it was like before YouTube was as prevalent with information as it is. You know what I mean? Like I remember back in the day, like, you were reading magazines and you were trying to scour these awful forums, and you were looking for the fastest guy around, you know. And that's where, like, and you'll appreciate this from the New York City perspective, that's where street racing really was way more than street racing, right? Like,
yeah,
like for us, like, that street racing, it wasn't just about the actual races. It was about the fact that you were around other people that had that same go fast passion, and you can look at their vehicles and pick up things, and you're always looking for, like, what is he doing that makes him so much faster than me? And then as other people did that, you would find the next guy that has that breakthrough, and then you would, well, what is he doing now? Or and that's what kept things moving. And so your ability for, like, guys like you to put your information out there on YouTube and Facebook is just so monumental for the learning of the next generation of people that want to do this.
Yeah.
That's why I keep mentioning when I started. Like, forums were kind of big for me, because I would kind of just lurk forums for hours and hours. And of course, there's a lot of, like, wrong information on there, but you slowly start to, like, know the people who know their stuff, and you kind of, you know, respect their opinions on stuff. So I used to do a ton of forums, not really post, but just look, because I didn't really have anything to build back then. But, you know, kind of planning out my dream builds, and learned a lot through the forums. And now they kind of died away, which is a little bit sad, but there's still a ton of information on YouTube and stuff. So, like, I catch myself, like, you know, when I'm not working on my cars, I'm watching other people build stuff on YouTube and learning from them, like Ryan Turk and that, you know, the crazy Judd Supra. Like, I'm just looking at this guy, you know, that Dom Engineering dude, like, build this thing. I'm just, like, in awe, just completely blown away at, like, how that guy tackles problems. And I'm just like, man, I wish I could be, like, a tenth of his skill. But, you know, he's probably been doing this for 20, 30 years. So, you know, you just kind of have to learn from other people and get to that point eventually.
Eric, the tools that they have is just, like, listen, so here's the thing. Like, I'm a tool geek, right? Totally tool nerd, right? And I love, like, that's, I love TIG welding. I love MIG welding. I love, you know, fabricating. So I do have the ability to do a lot of stuff. But when you can watch what they can do, and they're like, oh, we need this, and they just go over to the mill.
Yeah, just machines it.
And just machine, like, a lower control arm or a custom this or this. And that guy Dom is really sick. Really sick. So yeah,
he's an amazing artist.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
and
wild.
And that's why I kept mentioning, Eric, like, I know, because I was listening to you on another podcast, and you were saying how it's time consuming doing the YouTube videos with trying to work on the car and stuff like that, and you're having a hard time with it. But as a person who's a newly geek person and loves Hondas and stuff like that, I think what you're doing is very informative. I think we need it, you know, because even though there is a lot of platforms out there that do have it, it's not in the perspective that you're giving, you know, and I think you should continue doing it, you know?
Yeah. And that's one, like, benefit with the stand. It's kind of a unique build, you know, not many people have tried this. Obviously there's going to be people who have done it, especially like the guys at Hone. They basically built almost the same exact car, but it's kind of very unique in the Honda world to go this extreme. And there's a lot of things that I'll have to figure out and kind of overcome. You know, it's kind of funny, like, your guest next week, Brian Gillespie from Hasport, you know, he's going to be a critical part in this build, because I'm going to have to raise the engine up just because with the way the K24, it's a pretty tall engine.
Yeah.
And on the hatch, the oil pan was probably 2.5 to 3 inches off the ground. So as you can imagine, any major hit, you know, you're pretty much going to destroy your oil pan. So with the sedan, it's going to be even lower. So you, like, the only option is for the engine to go up even higher. So Hasport's going to be providing some custom mounts to move the engine up, which are probably going to, it's probably going to mean the engine's going to be poking through the hood, but that's kind of a sacrifice you have to take just to kind of keep the engine alive. But yeah, there's going to be a ton of like little things like that where, you know, you'll have to go completely custom to make it work.
So where do the GLTC rules state with dry sumps?
Yeah, it's possible, but it's kind of funny because the engine that I run in these cars, it's completely stock internals, you know, minus, you know, like a Type S oil pump and maybe just like some stiffer springs, but everything else internally, completely stock.
Yeah.
So I'm buying these engines for $800 and to strap like a $3,000 dry sump setup onto it just to maintain a ride height. It's so ridiculous. It has crossed my mind though, yeah, but
I know.
It's just, there's so much headaches to deal with the dry sump system in a stock engine. It's just, I don't know. The more I think about it, the more ridiculous it sounds. So first I'm going to try to raise the engine up even more to see how much glide currents I can get. And I'll deal with the repercussions after that and make sure the axle angles are all correct. But raising the engine should help. So we're going to go that route first.
So we get Brian to make some mounts here. He raises the engine up a little bit. And then we get somebody that's got some cool sheet metal capabilities to do a custom hood to put a big bubble in the area it's supposed to be, right?
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, I'll have to... I don't know what the situation will be like yet until I get the engine in there, but I'll have to find like a specific intake manifold, probably an RSX, to kind of have it swoop down. And because the intake manifold is what I had the most issues with clearance on the hatch. And then hopefully it's just like a little bit of the valve cover that might be peeking out of the hood, which I think might look pretty cool. But like I said, we'll see what happens once we get the mounts in the car. And like another cool aspect of that was, I don't know if you're familiar with, you know, Honda Civics and Integras, but the engine mount kind of sits where I had to do the tub.
Yep.
So I cut all that out and Brian's going to make me an EK style mount, which is kind of a bolt on to the frame rail. So the mount will kind of be away from where the tub is. So that gives me significantly more room to kind of weld in those tubs and have more room for the wheel and tire. So
right, because
a lot of custom stuff with that.
So instead of sitting like this, he'll have you something that will come up from the side of the frame rail kind of thing.
Yeah, so it'll be out of the way so I can put those tubs in how I wanted to and give me the maximum amount of room I can have for the wheel and tires.
So dope.
Well, so and
yeah,
you know, I wanted to ask this because I'm sure when this whole situation happened, you thought about what was going to happen next and then you decided, okay, I'm going to do a new build. What made you decide to do the sedan?
Yeah, so... Initially, after the wreck for a few weeks, you know, I was kind of reaching out to, you know, frame shops here and there and getting quotes on what it would cost to fix. And there was some really good shops that do amazing work, but they also charged, you know, a lot of money to fix it. And some of those guys were like, well, I don't know if it's going to be 100%, you know, correct once it's done. It's kind of a risk. And kind of put a feeler out there, you know, kind of teasing like, hey, like, you know, I really want to start a sedan build. And then a guy on Instagram, Daryl, reached out to me and he says, hey, man, I got a four-door sedan here in Florida. It's completely gutted. You know, I want you to have it if you want to start a build from scratch.
Wow.
So he basically reached out to me to donate the shell. And then that's the car sitting here. So I was super fortunate that he did that and drove 30 hours and a day and a half to pick the car up, brought it up to Ohio. And now it's completely torn apart and cut up.
What is that guy's name?
But Daryl.
Daryl.
Daryl's the truth.
Man, Daryl, you're a real MVP. That's what's up.
Yeah, Scott, can I have a 350Z? Yeah,
no problem.
Can I have it?
Yeah, no problem. That's fantastic.
But yeah, well, I mean, there was a ton of people who reached out and they were like kind of sending me deals like, hey, I know this EG hatch, you know, for sale for $2,000. And oh, my buddy over there has, you know, a coupe that you can buy or an Integra. But my heart was sold on the sedan. And it's actually pretty funny because with the Integra Type R in the back I have there, I always thought that one day that car was going to be the next race car. I was like, no. Man, you know,
I was actually going to ask you that too.
I was like, man, if I wreck the hatch, because actually, you know, when I first started real like road racing, I was almost gonna put a cage in the Type R and race that. But then I found the hatch for a killer deal and bought that. But I was always like, man, if I ever wreck the hatch, you know, maybe it's gonna be time to turn the Integra into a race car. And I just couldn't, I couldn't do it.
Yeah,
it's a pretty nice car.
You can't
definitely
do that.
Didn't want to tear it up.
Yeah, no,
so
you can't do that.
Daryl reached out and went down the sedan route, kind of sealed the deal, and you know, now I get to build it. So
yeah, I agree. Don't touch your Civic. The Integra Type R. Man, it's like you're just not.
Poor car gets neglected though.
I know, but you know what? These cars, they're never going to be replaced. They're never going to be the, and you're not going to be able to come by them. They're not out there anymore. You know what I mean? Like, you talk about history with your with the hatch, but like, there's history no matter which way you go. I just, you can't do that car like
that. The value in that car is going to go.
It already is.
It's
kind of funny because I used to have a B18 in the hatch, and I used to race it like that for years. And man, the B18s were so awesome. Revved it to 9 grand and never had any issues with it. The sound was just unreal. And I went with the K24 just because, you know, they're cheaper. They make way more torque, and competitively it's a better package, but I always kind of missed the B, and you know, luckily I got the Integra to kind of drive it, but you kind of realize driving on the street that the B's are pretty damn slow.
Yeah.
But hey, it's a great car. I love it. So one of the things I'm most excited about with the sedan though, is I am going to make it completely street legal, and I am going to drive it on the road.
Wow.
So I've always wanted to drive the hatch, you know, just kind of go to meets and cruise around, because I used to love doing that when I was younger. And I think it's just going to be completely awesome to have a complete insane race car that I can drive on the street. So one day you might see me rolling around in the city trying to dodge all those huge potholes.
Well, if you do, you can stop by and say hello. I'll
have a few oil pans just in case.
That's right. Not dry sump pans. But
so
what but it's going to be hilarious without that. Oh, sorry.
No.
The turning radius is going to be terrible. So it's going to be a nightmare to drive on the street.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously we don't want to keep you too long, but I kind of wanted to get to
think we're done.
I think the camera might have died. But what I wanted to ask you was, I know you still work for Honda, correct?
Yeah.
I know one of the things that you've been doing and you've been working with another team, correct, as a crew chief. Tell us a little bit about that program and what you're doing there.
Yeah, that's the volunteer racing team at Honda. So if you're a Honda employee, you have access to this racing team, and it's 100% volunteer. So we have a race shop kind of close to the factories, and you show up and you put your time into the team. And we have some pro cars that we race, and we do IMSA. So we have... unfortunately, COVID kind of delayed any activity, but we are starting back up, and we have a Honda Civic TCR that we're going to be racing here soon at Daytona in the TCR class. So the team is called Honda of America Racing Team, also known as HART. And I was a crew chief for a few races right before we got shut down for COVID, and we're starting back up and hopefully kind of get that role back in crew chiefing. And kind of excited for that. It's been a while since I've been in a pro paddock. It's a completely different experience. It's awesome, you know, crewing for the team. And the great part about it is that, you know, when you put time into this team, you actually get time off of work to go to these races. So you don't have to like use vacation, which is awesome. And you get so much experience, you know, as a team in this environment, and it kind of helps you put those skills back into your daily job. So that's kind of why Honda really supports that program. And we're starting it back up after COVID, so we're all pretty excited.
How much experience, you know, do you get from that type of learning? I mean, way different knowledge base of and level of access to resources, right? Like, so how much of that do you get that you really bring over?
Oh man, so much. I mean, first of all, you're working with a lot of other engineers that, you know, a lot of those guys are smarter than you. So you learn a lot from those guys and then, you know, the whole team environment. But, you know, just working on these cars, like just seeing how they're built, and it's just a lot of knowledge to be gained on how to do things efficiently and effectively. And the team kind of, you know, they have a good setup where, you know, you're learning from the other engineers and you're learning how to set cars up. That's where I learned, you know, most of like setups, you know, on cars and alignments is, you know, we have, you know, an alignment rack that's, you know, pretty expensive. And so, you know, just a lot of things you need to do in this pro environment to kind of get every tenth out of these cars. And, you know, all of that kind of trickles down to what I do in this garage and what I do at work.
Yeah. So when you start doing a lot of this stuff with Honda and you go into this stuff, is there any talk, do they have any mention or exposure to some of these when electric platforms could essentially start to integrate their way into racing?
Well, yeah, I don't know. It's, I guess at the moment, not really. Right. I do know that one of the team members, he has built, an NSX, like a new one, a hybrid NSX for, you know, NASA and SDCA, like a competition club racing car, which I think probably one of the first hybrids that might have raced in these series. So that's kind of pretty unique. You know, he had to get the car homologated into these club racing classes. But in terms of pro stuff, you know, we haven't really used any electric cars yet. Like the GT3 NSXs, you know, we used to race those, I think, 3 or 4 years ago. And, you know, that car, it's just the engine, you know, there's no hybrid powertrain. But I think right now, you know, we're slowly transitioning to that, you know, with like the DPIs, I think they're going hybrid pretty soon. As far as the car is racing full electric, you know, I'm not sure when that's going to happen, but I guess it's going to be soon.
Yeah, it's hard. It's like, you know, from a car, I say this, like, I don't want anybody to think that I'm pro let's go electric right away, but it's something that I feel like if we close our eyes on, if we go blind on this thing, I think we're doing ourselves a disservice, because whatever happens, it's going to happen whether we want it to or not, right? So, but racing isn't necessary. Like, and I say this to people all the time, racing and tuning, they will exceed and surpass the internal combustion engine, right? Like, that may go. I'm not saying I want it to.
You're breaking Eric's heart right now.
No, but listen, but like, he knows what I'm talking about, though, because here's the thing.
Yeah, it's inevitable.
All right, so you take the engine part of it out. There's going to be battery management. There's going to be all these different things to try to figure out how to, you know, tweak these electric platforms. But at the end of the day, setting up a car, driving a car, being competitive in a race car, it's just going to change the playing field that you start from, but it's not going to change the ability to race.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely excited to see what the future brings us. You know, like Formula E has kind of been growing, and the cars have been getting cooler by the season, so it's kind of cool seeing that progress. But I love my engines, but yeah, I'm not afraid of the new technology. But hopefully, you know, I'll still get to race my sedan in the next 20 years. And
I was about to ask you if inevitably that's a change, what are you going on? What platform would you go on
for electric?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know, man.
It's too early to tell. Eric, we won't. We'll let you plead the fifth. That's not a fair question, man.
All right.
I don't know. I mean, the Teslas like are insane. Like the amount of speed they produce, like it's just like unfathomable. I've never ridden in one, but it must be like ridiculous with like the Plaids and the Roadster that's coming out.
Eric, you gotta check out one of these Plaids, man. I have not been in a Plaid, but I have a video of my friend riding in a Plaid, and he's not a lightweight. Like has over like 1,000 horsepower GTR, has had big power cars before. When I say that he literally was in the passenger seat and like couldn't breathe because it accelerated so freaking fast.
It's just crazy that you can buy this car. What does it run on the quarter? Like 8 or 9?
Yeah, it's super fast. It's like, it's crazy fast.
Yeah. It blows my mind.
But then they went ahead and made a steering wheel that you can only hold here. Like, there's no,
it's pretty beautiful.
Like, what do you do with your hands? You know?
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I think it'd be pretty cool to like get some Teslas to race in our class GLTC, but right now it's kind of tough with like safety, you know, with like the battery packs and getting the fires out. So I know GridLife has a few time attack Teslas out there that, you know, they rip, they're super fast. Like they're beating BMW M3s, like Tesla Model 3s, you know, So it's pretty cool to see how capable battery electric cars are. And I saw like Porsche just like release like their future like electric race car, which looks absolutely awesome. So
yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, it seems that's the direction we're all trending towards. And I know a lot of people are disappointed, but I think the raw performance is just, it's there for sure.
Listen, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I want to let you go. I appreciate everything you shared with us. I want to encourage people to follow you and subscribe to your stuff because...
Yes, which is all in the bio, by the way.
Yeah, it's already there.
Make sure you subscribe to his YouTube. He's doing cool things in there.
Yeah, man, people don't understand. Listen, if you're building any type of car, if you have any plans to do any type of racing... You want to be able to learn from the people that are using the practical experience that they've gained.
Yes.
Through racing. They're not like me. I'm not telling you about things that I don't do. Eric's out there doing them, and he's telling you exactly what he does to be competitive. So make sure you check Eric out. And Eric, man, if you end up swinging through this way, let us know. Yep. We'll all take a run out to Aki. We'll bring some pizza. It's going to be good.
Oh yeah,
we're gonna chill.
Yeah.
By the way, people say that Ohio pizza is pretty good, which I don't understand.
Eric, can you weigh in on this?
Nah, dude. No way.
I was actually listening to the podcast, Joe Rogan's podcast, and
they cut pizza out here into squares. Like, what is that? It makes all the centerpieces useless.
No, the guy Jay pizza.
Square. Wait, they take the round pizzas and cut them to squares?
That's like
yes. Oh, it's ridiculous.
My God. Ohio, what are you smoking out there? Well, come on.
And I'm telling you, the guy Jamie from the Joe Rogan podcast swears up and down that Ohio pizza is better than New York pizza.
All right, where's Jamie from?
I know, right? We got to go beat him up.
Where's Jamie from?
He's from Columbus.
Oh, come on. Get out of here. Listen, all right. We will make sure that we endorse this. I hope that in the future we can get you to maybe help us record a garage tour or maybe a toolbox tour because I think it'd be super dope for people to see what's in your toolbox that you're able to use to build all these cars.
Yeah, definitely. I'd love to do that. It'd be awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah. Eric, thank you.
And Happy New Year's, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, you too, guys. Happy holidays. Happy New Year's.
We got to get out of here because this camera's done. This camera has – our camera has basically said, hey, look, you guys have been on and we're done. So take care of yourself. Have a good holiday. And we'll speak to you real soon.
Thanks, Eric.
Okay. And yeah, thanks for the wheels that you guys provide. Really appreciate it.
It's our pleasure, man.
On course cars. So
it's our pleasure. Thanks for rolling with us. We appreciate all the support, really.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the new wheels are going to look awesome on this car. I'm super pumped to get them.
Yeah, and I'm excited for the feedback. I just think it's always good to get good feedback. You know, we take that feedback, we constantly put it into the product that we're developing, you know, for the future. So, you know, that's so much of the importance that we have about being in these series, being in GLTC and running with guys that are technically able to give us that good feedback, you know?
And you already know, Eric, if you need anything, you know, you just message us and we're there, man. I think, you know, we like to follow your journey and we're fans here, so.
Awesome. Appreciate it.
All right, Eric. We'll catch you up.
Yeah, have a good one, man.
Have a good New Year.
Yeah, you too, guys. Happy holidays.
You too.
Bye.
Bye. Well, listen, I think that was cool. I had a good time because, one, you know, I haven't been able to do this in a minute.
Yeah.
Two, because Eric's a car guy. You know, I love car guys.
Yeah.
Pause. And
good pause.
Thank
good
you,
pause.
Man. Thank you. And, you know, look, I think that just even having, I've taken a few days off recently, and what it's done for me is I've been spending time in the garage that I should.
I mean, you purposely wore that shirt.
Well,
guys,
we did a garage tour today. You guys.
That's right.
I can't. I have plans to go. My wife got me this shirt. She thought it was the ultimate dig. But listen, so here's the thing. We did a garage tour with my garage, and we also did a toolbox tour, my toolbox. I don't know if you're going to care, but it will be out in a few weeks. Make sure you check it out. Also, just a random side note, if you're fans of Matt Farah, the Smoking Gun podcast, and, you know, Doug DeMuro was just on there. I think it's episode 688. And they, around the 24-minute mark, they talked about, you know, just a brief mention of Koenig. I just thought it was really interesting how they used the brand to kind of equate it to a generation and how times change. So shout out to them just for, it's not a shout out. It's not an endorsement. I'm just shout out to them, I guess, for the acknowledgement.
Of
right?
course. It's always good to hear that type
of stuff. Yeah, but don't forget that we have a piece of content coming out on Friday, Hype is Right, and the following Friday we have something good coming. I think it might be my toolbox tour. So make sure you get subscribed. Also, if you are not on YouTube, Koenig Wheels USA is the place you need to be. You need to get subscribed. You need to click the notification bell. All of our giveaways that are going to be happening. I don't know what Luis. Luis is trying
to point at the... But, is it what? Here? I don't know. Would it be here, the subscribe button?
Man, anyhow. So... all of the giveaway stuff we have going on for the first quarter, it's going to happen on YouTube. You need to be subscribed over there. You need to be subscribed right here, whatever. But anyhow,
listen. Oh, yeah, but hey, listen. Also, you know, 2022 is coming up.
It's coming.
We got a lot of big things coming.
Big
Stay
things.
Tuned. And that's why, like Scott said, you make sure you're subscribed because
get subscribed.
This is where you're going to learn about him.
Yeah.
Right here with us. So happy New Year's from
Happy New Year.
Both of us here. Yeah. We appreciate all the love and all the support that you guys give us. We're honestly like so happy and just grateful to have you guys, man.
Yeah, and
without you guys, we're nothing.
And on behalf of everybody at Koenig, we wish you and your family just a really wonderful New Year, a safe New Year, a healthy New Year. And we're just so blessed to have the support that you guys provide us to be able to keep making cool wheels and keep making dope content.
Yeah, man.
Self-proclaimed. Anyhow, take care of yourself.
Happy New Year's, guys.
We'll catch you later.